This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 1 month ago, when word of President Bush's warrantless domestic wiretapping push became public, the buzz was constitutional crisis. Legal scholars, Democratic opponents, and even conservative Republicans said this was illegal, that it was putting the presidency above the law. This week, in a bold move that could create precedent for generations, the White House is saying, what about it? Karl Rove and George Bush have now put their boundary-stretching interpretation of presidential power at the heart of the Republican midterm election campaign. Yesterday in Kansas, voters cheered. Up next on Point, security, politics, and presidential power pushed to the limit and maybe beyond. In a moment, we'll hear from Senator Lincoln Chafee and Congressman Jim Leach, Republican of Iowa, two Republicans facing re-election this fall. But first, joining me from Washington is Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN. Bill, thanks very much for being with us. What do you make of this big push? Why?
Well, because the war on terror is President Bush's core issue. It's what defines him as president, and it's what's kept him and his party in power. This president feels he has the standing to fight this issue on his ground, which is protecting America. You know, the White House has even relabeled the wiretap program to his political advantage. They now call it the Terrorist Surveillance Program.
We saw big applause in Kansas for this yesterday. The polls show Americans pretty evenly divided. What's the political calculus here, Bill?
Well, the people are of two minds on this issue. At the moment, 46% say it's justified, 51% say it's wrong. I think they don't like the idea of a president apparently putting himself above the law, but they understand the reasons why it might be necessary. I think the political calculus is simply that this worked for the Republicans in 2002 when they won the election on the war on terror. It worked for the Republicans and for President Bush personally in 2004 when he ran on the war on terror. And Karl Rove clearly signaled last Friday that they're going to use that issue again, the war on terror, because they believe that's where they have the political advantage. And in fact, the polls show that is the one issue where Bush holds the political advantage right now.
But, Bill, what kind of constitutional territory are we getting into here? Democrats are howling loudly, but even on very conservative Republican and libertarian quarters, there's a lot of criticism of this. Prominent Republicans saying, this doesn't look legal. We're not sure this is constitutional. And here it is, the mainstay of a new political push.
Right. There are some serious risks in what the White House is doing. Some Republicans and conservatives, not just Democrats, are bothered by what they see as an abuse of government power. That's one of the risks. Another risk is that the president's credibility has been weakened. He's saying to the American people, trust me, I'm doing this to protect you. But right now, a lot of Americans no longer trust him. And there's also the risk that Democrats will get smart and challenge the president on his conduct of the war on terror. They have to make the case, I think, not just that what the president is doing is illegal, because, look, he's bringing out the attorney general today to argue that it's perfectly legal. The Congressional Research Service has argued that they don't think it's based on any grant of authority by Congress. You're going to have lawyers arguing back and forth forever. I'm not sure that's a way to score points. They've got to argue, Democrats and critics, including Republicans, if they want to make their case, not that it's illegal, but that it's unnecessary and ineffective, because Democrats have never really engaged this president in the war on terror. Are his policies making the U.S. and the world safer? That's the question they've got to ask.
Bill Schneider, do you see precedent in American history for a White House building or putting at the heart of a major political campaign a constitutionally challenged argument, or more than argument, act? I mean, here's something people are saying is not legal. The White House is holding it up as a centerpiece. Has this been done before? Are we in new territory here?
Well, I'm not sure it's a wholly new territory. I don't know that this particular act has been done, although there is some evidence of secret wiretapping by the FBI and other authorities in the past. It was never the basis of a political campaign. Everyone knows famously that President Lincoln suspended habeas corpus during the Civil War, but he didn't run on that issue. This president defines himself as the president of 9/11, the president who's leading the country and the world in the war on terror. That's what's different about this, not the apparent violation of the law, but the fact that the president is making this his issue to run on. And it worked in 2002, it worked in 2004, and they intend to do it again because it's the only issue where most Americans still support President Bush, and they believe it trumps all other issues.
John McCain, Senator John McCain of Arizona, saying this doesn't necessarily look legal to him, and that the president, if he needs additional room to maneuver through the NSA, ought to come back to Congress and specifically ask for that authority. Why, in practical or political terms, doesn't President Bush do that? Why leave himself exposed to this charge of abusing the Constitution, of expanding presidential power under the umbrella of war?
Well, the White House has argued that it's impractical for reasons that they elaborate. I'm not sure I can. That it's impractical for them always to get a warrant, even though it's possible to get a warrant after the fact under the law. That given the exigencies, the necessities of to act fast in the war on terror, that and I've heard the White House make this point, that in order even to get a warrant after the wiretapping has begun, you have to accumulate evidence that the suspect really is a terrorist suspect and that the wiretapping is justified. You have to build something like a court case, and they don't always have the time or resources to do that. So they claim that the war on terror is utterly unprecedented in American history. It's not like any other conflict that America has ever faced, and that therefore exceptions have to be made. Including in this case, possibly an exception to the president's constitutional authority.
Bill Schneider, we're reading this morning Bruce Fein, a former Justice Department official in the Reagan administration, saying this power will lie around like a loaded weapon for any future incumbent to use when he wants to override a law. There will be terrorism forever, so it will become a permanent fixture on our legal landscape. That is the president's kind of extra legal step here in his interpretation. This is a former Reagan administration official. Do you see, we're going to hear in a few minutes from Lincoln Chafee, from Jim Leach, moderate Republicans. Do you see this issue uniting the Republican Party or opening up cracks in it?
Opening up cracks is my choice. I think it divides Republicans, and not just moderate and liberal versus conservative Republicans, but a lot of conservatives who distrust big government. It bothers them a great deal. Former Congressman Robert Barr was supposed to be on the platform last week with Al Gore when he lambasted the administration for assuming this power. A lot of conservatives are worried about this. It opens up a division within the Republican Party because, as I said at the beginning, mm-hmm. Americans are of two minds about this. They believe that the president should not put himself above the law, but they understand reasons why it might be necessary. And I believe a lot of Republicans are of two minds about this, including a lot of conservative Republicans.
But why not go back to Congress and just establish the authority? There's a Republican majority there. President Bush would presumably get a warm hearing if he went to John McCain and others and said, here's what we need to practically carry this out. Is the White House deliberately looking to set a precedent to expand the power of the White House here, of the executive?
Well, I think they are. They do believe that the power of the president has to be expanded at a time of what they regard, what most Americans regard as a dire threat to the United States. Going to Congress would, of course, trigger a debate. It could be a very difficult and ugly debate, dividing even the Republican Party, and they clearly don't want to do that. They believe that this is inherent in the power of the president as commander-in-chief. It does bother Americans. It bothers them very deeply. That is why they are divided on this issue, unlike most issues relating to the war on terror, where Americans are willing to grant the president a lot of authority. On this one, Americans really are split. They are of two minds about it, and it does not sit well with them that the president is apparently putting himself above the law.
Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN. Bill, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
I want to turn now to Senator Lincoln Chafee, Republican from Rhode Island, first elected to the Senate in 2000. He's up for re-election this fall and joins us now from Providence, Rhode Island. Senator Chafee, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Do you support the president's NSA domestic surveillance program?
I think it's right that the Judiciary Committee is going to hold hearings, and I think that's important. We all took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and when you read your Fourth Amendment, it's very, very clear. You need warrants to search houses, papers, persons, or effects.
So you're glad there are going to be hearings, but what's your personal assessment of this? Is it illegal? Is it unconstitutional?
I think it's important to have these hearings and to find out exactly where we're going to go on this. The fact that we're here talking, it's obvious that there are questions about it. And once again, you read your Fourth Amendment, it's very clear. And the writers of the Constitution back in 1789 were very, very clear about this. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures.
We're talking this hour about politics, executive power, the U.S. Constitution, and the president's new defense of his warrantless domestic wiretapping program. We're joined right now from Iowa City, Iowa, by Congressman James Leach. Republican congressman, represents Iowa's 2nd District, first elected to Congress in 1976. He's been around a while. Representative Leach, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, glad to be with you.
Let me put the same question to you. The president is defending this program, saying it's within the law, within the Constitution, and he's got to do it. Do you support the NSA domestic surveillance program, or terrorist surveillance program, as the president now puts it?
Well, I'm uncomfortable with it. I frankly think it's definitively inconsistent with one law. That's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978. It might be more ambiguous in terms of legality in relationship to the powers granted the president under authorities related to 9/11. And then you have this constitutional dilemma. Lincoln is absolutely right about his description of the Fourth Amendment. On the other hand, the president would say that the second article in commander-in-chief powers gives him certain flexibility. These are very large questions. Tragically, and I think bizarrely, this issue was not brought before the Congress, because I'm very confident the Congress would have been very attentive to requests to slightly alter the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, as it has slightly in other ways, and that would have been sympathetic, and therefore we could have brought a greater degree of a process to consideration of these kinds of things, and brought a court presence to bear. And this lack of court presence is what is so ticklish, not so much the lack of the fact that Congress would be totally unified. Here, I think it's the lack of court presence that has made this issue so completely uncomfortable for the American people.
That is, no judge signing off on domestic surveillance when American citizens are involved. Senator Chafee, why do you think the White House has not come back? Your colleague, Senator John McCain, says, look, we've got a problem here. Bring it back. Work with Congress. We'll make the adjustments you need to do this within the process, within the law. Why wouldn't the White House do that?
That's a key question. It's very easy to go before these judges. It's a swift process when necessary, and I can't answer that question. Certainly the administration's rationale here under the Article 2, the Commander-in-Chief, that's one reason. And then in Article 2, all of Article 2, the executive powers, is only that one sentence: the president shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army, Navy of the United States, and of the militia of the several states. That's one rationale for this power. The other is the resolution that we passed after September 11th, which was authorizing force against al-Qaeda. And the administration is saying that, and even the president in his speech at Kansas yesterday referenced this, and the line there in this power is the president is authorized to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or persons. And the key word there is appropriate. The president is authorized to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, and persons he determines, planned, authorized, and on it goes. And in his speech in Kansas yesterday, curiously, he said, I'm not a lawyer, but I can tell you what it means. It means Congress gave me the authority to use necessary force to protect the American people. The president didn't say the complete sentence, necessary and appropriate. And I think that word appropriate is going to be key as we go forward.
Congressman Leach, what do you see at stake here in terms of the division of powers in the U.S. government? Are we seeing a precedent set that could or will substantially expand presidential authority for a long time here?
Well, I think we have to be concerned about precedent, because we have to look backwards. And frankly, in times of war, other precedents presidents have gone further. I mean, there was a reference earlier to Lincoln suspending habeas corpus. Woodrow Wilson arrested a prominent person who opposed World War One. He later authorized raids on perceived leftist organizations. You had FDR and the incarceration of 120,000 Japanese Americans. You had Truman and taking over the steel industry. You had
trying to,
and that's the only example in time of war that the courts moved against a president. But then you had Nixon, who bugged some enemies, bugged his own aides, bugged his own brother, and these are the kinds of precedents that currently exist. And it's because of those precedents that we've passed the 1978 statute. But I would simply stress that this is a very uncomfortable situation, and one that could conceivably be righted, but it does stand out there for future presidents at future times, and at least the administration. And here I think we have to be careful about just how we say this, but has made it clear that it isn't using this power to attempt to eavesdrop on enemies of the president in a political sense. They're using the power against enemies of the United States.
They say that, but they ask the country to trust them on that. There's no judge who's overseeing the
facts,
right, of that.
That's right, and there's not only no judge, there's no great paper trail that has been presented to the Congress, although there have been some sparse notifications to certain congressional leaders about this. It's very important that we have a public review, basically to hold in check something going further than currently exists, and then to question whether what exists is exactly appropriate or not.
Lincoln Chafee, how about it? Do we see the relationship between Congress and the presidency changing right under our feet here as the president goes on down this road?
Well, certainly the strategy of making this issue play politically to the administration's advantage, as spelled out by Karl Rove, is a key issue here. And all of us politicians, we listen to our constituents, and this is going to be no different. I mean, if the American people really start to question whether their Fourth Amendment rights are being violated, then Congress will react also. But it sounds like this is going to be a full-out campaign as from the administration to justify their actions. But I think as time goes by, people realize we all took an oath. The president took an oath to uphold the Constitution. We did. Congressman Leach did. I did. And ultimately, that's what we have to do, uphold the Constitution. And these are constitutional issues, as I said. The Article 2, presidential powers, Fourth Amendment, those are what are in question.
Oath to uphold the Constitution, and two moderate Republicans saying they're not so sure that's happening right now. Senator Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Congressman James Leach from Iowa's 2nd District. Congressman Leach, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
I want to turn to two guests right now. First, from Great Falls, Virginia, we're joined by Mona Charon, syndicated columnist, author of Do-Gooders, How Liberals Hurt Those They Claim to Help. Mona Charon, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And Jonathan Turley joins us from Washington. He's professor of law at George Washington University. He is representing a criminal defendant, Virginia Islamic scholar Ali Al-Tamimi, who was convicted of inciting terrorism in the challenge to the NSA surveillance program. Jonathan Turley, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Mona Charon, you heard the president yesterday, Karl Rove last week, General Hayden, and the cheers in Kansas. What do you make of the White House's new push here? Is it right? Is it going to be effective?
Well, the president, I think, has learned from his bitter experience in the first part of the second term that he cannot afford to take shots and not respond. So he is trying, I think, across the board to be more responsive and to get himself out there. And I think it's perfectly right that he do so. And I thought he was quite strong yesterday in his off-the-cuff comments. It's interesting that the NSA business didn't even come up. I'm not sure that this has exactly lit a prairie fire in the nation the way it has among the press. People actually seem to be quite supportive of the president, and in my judgment, with very good reason. This is constitutional. It is a power that is inherent in the president's Article II authority, And I think that the critics are not living in the real world.
Not living in the real world because they don't agree with the president's assessment that he has the authority?
No, because they are, you know, because some of the comments of the critics, especially initially along the lines of, you know, this is an impeachable offense or the president is doing something illegal, is really over the top. In fact, you know, you could, reasonable men and women can differ as to the nature of presidential power, and you can suggest that perhaps the president may have overstepped his bounds, though I don't think he has in this instance. But to suggest that this is some sort of a criminal seizure of power by the president is really excessive.
Jonathan Turley, can, should reasonable men and women differ over their interpretation of the NSA program? Is this an impeachable offense the president's got going here?
Well, we certainly should have this debate. I testified in the first hearing on this issue in Congress. It's sort of a perfect storm for me because I write and practice in the area of surveillance, and I also write on the subject of impeachment. So it has brought together two areas. But I have to say I disagree with Mona, as many people do. This is clearly illegal, and it is clearly a crime. It states so in the federal statute. There's an exclusivity provision that says that this type of surveillance can only occur under Title III or FISA. It's perfectly clear. Now, the problem with the president's argument is that, on his inherent authority, is that it has no limiting principle, that the president has reserved the right, putting aside rather weak claims that he complied with FISA. Their alternative claim is that he has the inherent authority, regardless of FISA, to do this type of surveillance. That argument is so extreme that it's incompatible with our constitutional system because it has no limiting principle. If the president also reserved the right when he signed the torture prohibition, that he reserved the right to violate that law if he believes it's in the nation's interest. In the so-called torture memo, which was supposedly rejected by this administration, they said that the president could order federal officials to violate federal law. This is a long series of trends. You include enemy combatant policies that encompass this breathtaking view of presidential authority where the president becomes a maximum leader. Now, whether it's an impeachable offense, I believe that it is. That's what I testified in Congress to on Friday. It gives me no great joy to say that. But I think that it is clearly a federal crime. And if I'm right, and many people, I think the overwhelming majority of people in this field say it's a crime, then, yes, it would constitute an impeachable offense. The issue is simply political, whether a Republican-controlled Congress would hold hearings. And one of the things I told the Democrats in the Judiciary Committee on Friday was that it's a major problem that we're not even having hearings. That, you know, in on that occasion, the hearing, which had both Republicans and Democrats saying that this is a federal crime, it was held in the basement of the Rayburn Building because the majority would not even allow a committee room to be used.
But we have more hearings coming. Arlen Specter says he's got hearings coming. What do you mean exactly we're not having hearings?
Well, he's having a hearing with the Attorney General appearing. But what surprises me is that we have what I think anyone would accept is a serious allegation of illegality by the president. By this point, one would have anticipated that we would have had hearings already looking into these claims. I have to disagree with Mona. I believe that the claims being made by the president on things like the force resolution giving him authority to do this are legally absurd.
Mona Charon, Jonathan Turley says the president is now campaigning on a crime.
Well, I disagree. In 1994, Deputy Attorney General Jamie Gorelick argued that the president, then President Clinton, had inherent authority not just to order warrantless searches when it involved international objects, that is, the targets were not American citizens, but also to warrantless physical searches. There has never been a president since FISA was passed who acknowledged or agreed that FISA limited the president's inherent authority, and I think Professor Turley would surely agree that a statute cannot limit or constrain constitutional power. That would make the statute unconstitutional. And further, I think it's really important beyond the generalities about presidential power to talk about what is going on here. I mean, before September, in the immediate aftermath, rather, of September 11th, We had a great deal of breastfeeding and concern, and justifiably so, that we had not connected the dots, that we had not been alert, that we had not done the kinds of sharing of information that would have possibly led to discovering the plot. And now, any attempt to plug in those gaps and to make sure that we have some idea. Look, this war on terror is primarily a war of information. You can't defeat these people with tanks and troops on the ground for the most part. For the most part, you have to find out what they're planning before they have a chance to do it. But let me point to something else, though, that has come up a number of times, this notion of there is no check on presidential power. And, you know, in point of fact, we don't always, the check does not always have to be the courts. The Congress is a check, and the president has been dutifully reporting his activities on this NSA program to the Congress
more than a dozen times. Senator
Sorry?
Arlen Specter said he's not satisfied with the way the president reported
on
this.
Well, you know, every senator, I suppose, would like to be the president himself, but...
Well, it's hard to say that, well, there's always the check of the Congress. Congress passed a law that restricted the president to two options. The president has said, not just with FISA, but with the torture provision, also in the enemy combatant provision, that he reserves the right to violate federal law if he believes it's in the nation's interest.
Okay,
you can't
but Jonathan,
say that there's a
you know,
check
I don't,
when he claims that he can, if he says it's in national security, he can ignore things like the torture prohibition.
Well, you know, I think there was a lot of disingenuousness on the part of the lead advocate of that torture law, namely John McCain, because when he was really pressed about, well, what if there were a ticking time bomb scenario or something like that, he said, well, of course, then you would just, he didn't use these exact words, but this was his meaning, you would, in those cases, you know, the government just has to do what it does and, you know, the hell with the law. And, you know, so it was a really a kind of, I think it was a bit of stage, you know, of a preening on the part of the Congress to just show that they're more concerned about torture. But they didn't really even intend for the law to be adhered to.
But here we are on domestic surveillance. We've got Senator Lindsey Graham, no mean conservative, saying, I don't know of any legal basis to go around the FISA Act. He said, there may be some, but I'm not aware of it.
Called the Constitution of the United States.
Well, he's interpreting it the other way. Chuck Hagel says we need wiretaps, but there's a right way and a wrong way to do it.
Well,
Arlen Specter says there is no doubt this is inappropriate.
Okay,
there's a lot of Republicans lining up here.
I acknowledge that there are Republicans who have problems with this, but here's the other side. The problem with a probable cause standard is that it is a very, very high standard, which we apply for criminal investigations within this country, and that's highly, you know, very appropriate. But it isn't appropriate when you're chasing terrorists. You have to be able to track down little, you know, snippets of information on the merest suspicion that something might be amiss. And
Jonathan Turley, let me.
That's fine.
Yeah, let me ask you about that. You heard General Hayden there saying we're in hot pursuit and we've got to do everything we can here. Mona Charon saying it's not practicable to follow these procedures. Is this now practical, or could it be amended so that it would be practical? Is it necessary to blow by these things in the interest of security, or is there a way that's both clearly legal, constitutional, and effective?
Well, let me first of all point out that when you hear someone say, well, you know, the constitutional standard is just not workable, you know, he doesn't have the option to ignore the Constitution. He took an oath to God to uphold the Constitution. So whether George Bush thinks that probable cause is inconvenient or whether he doesn't like it, it doesn't matter. He's got a temporary job. And he qualified for that job by taking an oath to God that he'd carry forth the Constitution. If he doesn't like it, he can ask to amend it, and Mona can join him, and they can amend the Fourth Amendment.
We take your point on principle. We fully take it. But what about practicality? Just speak to it for a moment, if you would.
Well, in practicality, they're also ignoring the FISA law. The FISA law is the most user-friendly law a president has ever been given. There have been over 13,000 applications in FISA, and a handful have been turned down in decades. I was in FISA as a young intern at NSA. And it was such a blind process that I was opposed to it for the rest of my life, because you virtually can't get turned down. And when you say hot pursuit, FISA has a 72-hour grace period that as long as the Attorney General approves your operation, and you can do that orally with an approval, you call him up, and he then signs an approval in the office, you can go ahead and have 72 hours before you submit it to the FISA court. But the point of all this is, even assuming, and most of us in this field find it laughable that they're saying that FISA is somehow restrictive, but even if it is restrictive, he didn't have the option to violate. He goes to Congress. Now, he's gone to Congress before to ask to amend FISA, and Congress has largely given him what he has wanted. What he does not have the option to do is to say, well, I just don't feel comfortable with this statute or maybe with a constitutional standard, so I'm going to go my own way on that.
But that is what he's doing, and if that's the way he goes, what's the precedent? One moment, Mona Charon. What is the precedent that's established if the president goes down that path, as he is, Jonathan Turley?
Well, the problem is that we have a system that has a delicate balance. And in that balance, the framers rejected the very types of claims made here. The president cannot become a maximum leader. That's the legacy we have. That Constitution defines us as a people. What the president is saying here is that I reserve the right, when I'm acting in national security, according to my own discretion, then I can act independently. He said that with enemy combatants when he said he could strip citizens of their constitutional rights, deprive them of access to court and counsel on his own judgment. That's a very dangerous and destabilizing notion. And I, you know, respect Mona, but as citizens, regardless how we feel about this president, what's at stake is more than just whether George Bush committed a crime. It's whether you have a president who cannot just commit a crime, but openly say he's done it 30 times and will continue to do it until someone stops him.
Mona Charon, let me ask you about that. We hear your defense and your support of what the president's doing, but let me ask you, as a conservative, is there no bone in your conservative body that's troubled by this? It's being described as a kind of grab of Napoleonic power here. You may agree in detail on this one, but the overall gist of this, is it not at all unsettling to you as a conservative?
Well, I at the risk of taking on a law professor who I also respect very much, thank you, Jonathan, I would like to point out that, as I understand it, the Fourth Amendment protects us against unreasonable searches and seizures. It's the FISA law that requires the standard of probable cause. So the president is within his constitutional authority, and the president, this is the part where I really think the president's stance was misrepresented. He does not say, I am cheerfully violating the Fourth Amendment. He says he is acting within the Fourth Amendment, that this passes the reasonableness standard, but that it doesn't rise to the level of probable cause in every case. There's one other thing that I would say about this.
I, by the way, disagree with that. I mean, that's the same point. I'm sorry to interrupt, Mona, but General Hayden said the same point that, you know, probable cause is in FISA. But the probable cause standard is in the Fourth Amendment. There is a great debate about how significant the expression of unreasonable searches and seizures is, but the Fourth Amendment specifically requires probable cause.
Mona Charon, let me just ask the basic question here again. That we've got David Keene, chairman of the American Conservative Union, saying he's very concerned about this. As a conservative, Mona, do you have, I hear the justification you're making, but does it give you no pause in your bones to see this much power in the executive sort of taken without the balance of Congress when even Republicans are saying we've got a problem here?
Well, I do think that the Congress is a check on presidential authority. I think if the Congress got the sense that the president was simply going off on a tear and cheerfully violating people's rights, that they could demand hearings, they could speak up, they could complain and hold press conferences. Further, I am comforted as a conservative by the fact that if, let us say, you had a chief executive who was misusing this power. I firmly and deeply believe this president and this administration is not misusing this power. I think they are only chasing bad guys. But let's say we had...
But there's no independent observer. There's no judge.
Okay, wait, let me finish.
Please.
So let us assume that a new president comes along and is misusing this power. If he gets information about someone and then attempts to use it in a court of law, it would not be admissible. So there's another check.
And that, but that's good enough for you.
Well, you know, I am concerned about our civil liberties. I do think we have to be vigilant in their defense, but at the same time, in a world in which one nuclear weapon can obliterate a city, I am also much more concerned about defending our nation from the people who want to do us grievous harm.
There's a bottom line. The threat is so dire that we should essentially stop splitting hairs and look to defense.
Well, of course, that's the siren's call of every movement to reduce civil liberties. There's always that threat. Every generation has faced its scourge. And if you look historically, you will see that our most serious wounds as a people have been self-inflicted. You know, presidents always tend to act in popular ways. When we sent Japanese Americans to camps, it was popular. When we did the many things that we now regret historically, it was popular. That's not the test. And it is also not the test of, well, we're going to take offline, you know, the Constitution or the federal statutory law because, you know, these are dangerous times we're living in. You know, every president can make that claim. As citizens, we have to be vigilant. You know, Justice Brandeis gave a warning to future generations. He said the greatest threats to liberty in our country lie not with outside forces. It lies with men of zeal who are well-meaning without understanding. And what he was saying was, as citizens, we have to be cautious not to answer that siren's call, but to believe in our system, to take that leap of faith that we can fight our foes without losing who we are.
Mona Charon says Congress can and should be the check when necessary. Is Congress serving as an appropriate check now?
Well, unfortunately, the Congress has not been very aggressive. This is just the latest example of the president claiming that he can violate federal law. The first one was, of course, in the torture memo when, in writing, a memo went out signed by the Attorney General that the president could order officials to violate federal law. And this Congress has been largely AWOL on the issue. But having said that, you know, the Congress did exercise its authority. It passed federal laws. And if this president keeps on claiming that he doesn't have to comply with federal law, then there is no check and balance. We're down to a single branch, and indeed we're down to a single man, a maximum leader for our time.
Mona Charon, we've just got half a minute left here. What do you see 50 years down the road? Do you see a much stronger executive presidency? Is that necessary in this century, in your view?
Well, it may be necessary for the length of this war, but I think that in many cases in American history, what you have seen is that the civil liberties violations that have taken place during wartime have not persisted into the time of peace. I mean,
but
Lincoln,
this war has already lasted longer than World War II. We're told it may be decades.
That may be true, and it may be our longest war. Who knows? But that doesn't change what I'm saying, which is that that measures that are taken during wartime are different from those that apply during peacetime.
And there it is. Mona Charon, syndicated columnist, author of Do-Gooders. Mona, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Turley, are you comforted by that? The pendulum swings both ways. Take it easy. It'll swing back.
No, because someone will have to tell us when this war on terror is over and we can return to our constitutional values.
Jonathan Turley, law professor at George Washington University. Jonathan, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.